Yes, I will start the recording.
Trying to get the
It's
participants
all
list.
starting.
Okay, well, welcome to the March 23rd, 2021 session of Tangerine SDR and HamSci technical talk on Monday nights. My name is Dave, KV0S. And I attended the HamSci workshop. I had to step out a few times to deal with chores and stuff, but got to see all. Actually, I've gotten to see all the talks now because I went back and watched the ones that I missed. So that was one thing. And I also worked on the simulator. I got over my problem with getting the first Tangerine programmer working. So it discovers, and radio simulator sends back port B now. So I'm moving on to working on sending data packets back and forth with CRC checks to get that code working. So that's my next project. So that's it for me. Next on the list is Nathaniel W2NAF. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's been a busy weekend for me. I also attended the HamSci workshop and did quite a bit along with that, running it, organizing it. I was very happy with it. I thought everyone did a fantastic job. I'm very grateful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. W2NAF, back to that. Dave, are you there?
Look, his video's frozen.
Yeah, he does have that frozen look.
Yeah, all right. Well, I guess I'll take over the net then until he comes back. So I guess next, let's go to Greg Popolis.
Thanks, Nathaniel. Nothing to really add, just kudos to you and your team on a great job on the weekend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Dave McGaw, N1HAC.
Hello there. Yeah, great conference. And yeah, it was great to participate and trade information. I like the poster sessions because they really got conversation going. It wasn't just a one-way talks, though the talks were great, and I thought they went really well. I like the theme of mid-latitude aurora, because that's what I keep telling Jim LaBelle. You know, why aren't we studying here? And I know that this whole project will encourage that, because that's where these instruments are primarily going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to the surprises, because I know that, you know, we hams have seen a lot of things that we professionals haven't accounted for. Other than that, I've been working at Wallops, putting our VLF propagation sounding rocket together. My instruments that I'm responsible for are together. We've got some that you fix one thing, you break another. So we're a little delayed, but moving ahead on that. And again, the you know, what we're doing, it's picking up a signal of opportunity. It happens to be a megawatt transmitter over in Maine, but
right,
primarily, but follows the same kind of ideas. So I guess I'll give it back to Nat.
Thanks a lot. I guess I can hand it back over to Dave Larson.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had Greg and David McGaw go so far.
Yes. So next on the list is Bill AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Dave. Sorry to be a few minutes late. I had cooking dinner duties this evening and ran a little bit over, but I must say I enjoyed the conference very much. Learned a lot, got a lot of ideas for some new things to look into. As far as what I've accomplished recently, what I have is I have the grape running GNU radio with its waterfall, and right next to it on another screen, the Tangerine, of course, running with the simulated data engine, and comparing them to see how they compare. and trying to see, you know, what is the differences between what we observe in one and the other. Also, I've been going down the road of getting my GPU on my computer set up to work again so that I can go through and rapidly analyze a bunch of the digital RF stuff. I actually uncovered a bug in the CUDA code that is the fast Fourier transform stuff for that is currently the Python approach for feeding data into an FFT as I can get it from H5PY. So that's, it goes from digital RF and I can read that data using H5PY, and then I shove it into an FFT using the Python CUDA code, and I found a bug in it. So anyway, I'm working with the Russian developers on that. So you know, it's a laugh a minute here. Back to Nick.
Well, fine business. It's great that you're finding bugs and getting them fixed. Good. Let me move over here.
You're still there on.
Hello.
You're still there
on
one
the
of
other
yours.
Computer.
Well, we hear you, or did.
Nathaniel? Now,
yes.
I'm on the other computer.
I see them both on computers.
We see them both.
Okay. Oh, they're both working now. I'll mute one. Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
You're echoing.
We can still hear you and see you in two different places.
Okay. Well, next on the list.
How can you be two places at once when you aren't anywhere at all?
Ah, yes.
That's some fireside theater. Okay. Themselves. Okay.
Here, I'm going to.
I muted one of you.
He muted the other.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's got two speakers going, though. That's the problem.
Okay.
He's in two places, but we can't hear him.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm on the Linux machine, and I have the Windows machine muted. I was trying to make a backup. Next on the list is Bob, N4HY. Go ahead, Bob.
Thanks. Glad to be here. I had a great time on the weekend. Thank you, Nathaniel, for a great thing. And like the fellow before me, I enjoyed the poster sessions immensely. They were terrific. And it was really good to see all the young people getting involved. And kudos to you, Nathaniel, and everyone who's bringing them in. And for me, I'm lurking because I'm trying to learn everything I can about Tangerine SDR because I have a use for it. Later.
Very good. Say, Bob, I found a picture of you on the ARDN website or newsletter that had a tremendous amount of COVID hair. Was that you?
So when we shut down Virginia Tech and sent everybody home, I swore I would not shave my beard until I got vaccinated. And the day I got vaccinated, I shaved the beard off. I haven't shaved in about 5 days, so it's growing back. But yeah, I had a COVID beard. And for those of you who don't know, I'm on the board of directors of ARDC.
Thank you. Next on the list, we have Dan, N4XWE. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, Dave, and hello, everyone. I guess about the only thing I really accomplished this week, I unfortunately missed the sessions. Both Friday and Saturday, I was working. I had an excuse, and I'm kind of sorry I missed it. Anyway, I did work on I've been working for about the last 3 months on a script to install Dream, the DRM, or Digital Radio Mondiale client that runs in Linux. And I think it runs on the Mac and Windows as well. But I finally got it working. Have one little issue that I can't quite figure out. If I install it on a new install, it works perfectly. If I install it on an install that has some other programs that I've also put on, previously, it craps out during the compile. And I think that HamLive is what's causing my issues. So I'm going to investigate that this week. Anyway, that's about it from here. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business, Dan. And by the way, you can watch it on YouTube if you want to go back and watch the talks.
Okay, great. Thanks.
It's on Ham Radio Now 2.0.
Okay.
Next on the list is Dave in KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. Not a lot to report. I enjoyed the conference, but other than that, not a lot to say well, for now.
Fine business. And next on the list is myself, and then I'll skip him. Then it's Dev. Am I off again?
Is it me?
We got your audio.
Is it me?
Dev, it's your turn.
It's my turn?
Yes.
Hello, good evening, everyone. So we had a good workshop Friday and Saturday, and I think we are having good feelings about it, hearing good things about it. And we're starting a new week here at Scranton. Other than that, there has been not much progress in the work, but it's been a good workshop by many accounts. Thank you.
Well, I'm back on the wet laptop, but I don't know what's going on with my Linux box. Let me turn it. Okay. So next on the list is, is Dev.
Dev just gave
James, KG4, DSG. Go ahead, James.
Good evening, everyone. I missed the Friday sessions because of work, but I'm slowly catching up with the replays. And from what I've seen so far, it's a very good presentation. So with that, back to the group.
Are you there, Dave?
I don't see us.
He appears to be moving a little bit.
Maybe I should just take over for the rest of this.
I think he's having internet problems, it looks like.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
All right. Ward Hall. Have we heard from you yet?
Let's see.
No, good evening.
After James, we have Hillman, KD2. Go ahead, Hillman.
Compete or Ward? Should I go first?
Go ahead, Hillman.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. This is Hyomin Kim. Nothing really particular to report this week, although I really enjoyed the HAMSAI workshop, and I like really thank Nathaniel Friesel, who organized this HAMSAI workshop, which went really, really great. And I was so glad to see a lot of interest about the magnetometer. I'm really happy to see good data from the newly developed magnetometers that will be used for our personal space weather station. So that's it for me, and back to Matt.
Okay, now I think I can hear. Let's see. After that, we got Dan. Those people have talked. Jim K4BSE. Go ahead, Jim.
I'd like to add my congratulations for a great conference. I learned a lot. My head is still spinning from it. And I've got to go back and review a lot of the information. I downloaded a lot of the slides. I got to review that and listen to them. As far as this project, I've been working on that spreadsheet I started of the various time stations around the world. And got it fairly useful, I think, at least for a first cut. I sent that to Christina over the weekend, and I have not heard back from her yet. I kind of didn't expect to this soon. I have looked at the signals at the South Pole Station, McMurdo Sound, and there's a bunch of stuff that they probably can hear down there. I did a little bit of work on how do we reject signals if we have to. Can we do it with a directional antenna? And the answer is a big fat maybe. Worth trying. That loop that they sent should be a good antenna for that. But I'll just have to see. A lot of the signals do have some separation and bearing down there. But then I listened to a presentation from the QSO Today Hamfest by Eric Nichols. Had a very good presentation on the ionosphere. And he makes the point that as you get close to the poles, particularly, the ionosphere just may be bending the signals so they could come in at some angle that's not related to the great circle. So that's going to make it interesting. And I also told Christina that if she still needed some help with setting up a help desk for the grape as people start assembling them, that I thought I could probably handle that. Okay, back to Ned.
Well, Jim, you got a big thumbs up from John, and John's next on the list. So go ahead.
I can use all the help I can get. Spent most of last week preparing my ham site presentation. In fact, I'm going to go back and review it to see how bad I did. I also got a parts list to finally download correctly into the DigiKey BOM manager correctly. And I got that to, it was Joe. And I think he finally got it to work. He got his parts. He's now asking for an OS image. And so I'm going to concentrate on what Bill Engelke gave me for the upload scripts, get that working to a common one so I can distribute it to everybody. That way it all goes to the same place and they don't have to mess around with it. So that's this job's task, or this week's task. Back to Ned.
Well, fine business, John. And next on my list is Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Dave. Yes, the kudos to Nathaniel for another great HamSci conference. It was the posters in the chat rooms afterwards were awesome. And while most of the science was a bit over my head, it was great to listen to it and learn as much as I could from it. So it's great to see such a wide range of applications coming up here. One thing that is I did manage to nearly complete this week is the clock module. I don't know, Dave, you want to let me share my screen now or you want to wait till the afterwards?
Well, why don't we get through the list and then let you share that?
Okay. Anyway, that's got that pretty much done. There's a few tweaks that need to be made to make sure that we have everything addressed. And I've been going through a design review again to check everything, you know, check it twice, build it once kind of thing. And a couple of tweaks and then we'll be ready for that. And then we're going to move on to the data engine, which is already in CAD, but we're going to have to move some components around that are under the clock module to guarantee that they're going to be able to mate together. And then we'll be onward. But as you'll see when I show you the layout, did a pretty good job in matching up trace lengths and things like that. So it looks like a pretty good job. Looked impossible from the rat's nest. And I told him he's got to stop making it look so easy, or I'm going to keep giving him harder and harder ones to do. So as if this wasn't hard enough. So that's about it for this week. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business. And I believe next on the list is Joe, W7LUX. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, thank you, and a very good evening to everyone. I've been working with John and Nate OBJ on the grape, and I've got enough parts arrived today that I can probably put one together and get it going. Now I just need to figure out how to put all those little microscopic parts on the printed circuit board and hold them in place while I nail them down there. But that's pretty much it. Been super busy. Did not have time to do anything on the ham sci. The girlfriend had to go to the ER, so that was kind of busy there. Back to you there, Dave.
Well, fine business. Hope everything's getting better. Next on the list is Jonathan Rizzo, KC3EEY. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, everybody. I would like to congratulate Nathaniel for another awesome ham-sci. It went pretty much close to perfect. And the part that he was worried about the most, the breakout rooms, I thought that they went extremely well. There was a lot of really good discussion in the rooms, a lot of really good discussion on both days, and I really enjoyed it. And I'd like to thank him for involving me. Other than that, I have one quick question that could probably be addressed in general discussion. It's for Scotty. I was wondering for the clock that will come from the clock module. I was wondering about a buffer, because what I was going to do was I was going to feed the clock signal from the clock module into the buffer, and then the output of the buffer would drive the input of the A/D converter and the clock output pin on the leaf module to go back in to go into the FPGA. I was wondering if there was anything special that I should consider when choosing a buffer, other than single buffer module like an SOT 23 package. Other than that, I don't have anything else. Back to the net.
Well, fine business. And I see Ward Hall. Did you get called yet, Ward?
Oh, briefly. I said hello to the group. And okay. Thanks for letting me join.
Well, my dropouts got me shuffled around a little bit.
Yeah, that's about the time it happened.
Okay. And the problem, Nathaniel knows, these lists resort themselves every time somebody talks. So you got to be on your toes to keep track of who's been talked to and who's not. So next on the list should be John KJ6IBP. Go ahead, John.
Well, I'm still a beginner at this. I've got lots of learning to do, but I do know the work you guys are doing on the hardware. Even though I studied electronics for 2 years, it's still too advanced for me.
Well, there are all kinds of things to do, technical at varying levels. So hang around and you might find something. And seems like you have a nice cat.
Oh, yes. She's a nice kitty.
Very good. Next on the list should be Michael, AA8K. Go ahead, Michael. And for your information, Michael spent over 10 years recording the OpenHPSDR sessions every week. So he's got a long history of doing this.
Thank you.
Wow, 10 years?
Well, what are we, 10 years plus a couple of years of this?
That's more than that. We started HPSDR in like 2007, I think, or 2008. Right. But I'm thinking of the two boards that we produced. The production boards came out in about 07, I think.
And how many people here remember Phil Hartman?
Yes. Yes. So anyway, I wanted you to know that history about Michael. He's quiet, but he's persistent. So,
and just for my two cents, I think that the audio recordings are a good thing to have, because I suspect that eventually the video recordings, as big as they are, they may go away, or they may go somewhere obscure. But I know I've sent several people over to the audio recordings who said all they need is to listen. They don't really need to see. I mean, nobody needs to see my ugly mug anyway. So the audio is what they want.
Well, I had a number of Europeans when we shut down OpenHPSDR weekly meetings. Several people said, what am I going to do on Saturday morning in England? They'd listened to the previous night's recordings. Mm. So anyway, we got, I think Tom is monitoring only, KG6MKI. Oh, and then we have Tom McDermott. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, everyone. And Daniel, let me add my voice to the chorus of praises for HAMSAI. It was a great conference. Enjoyed it thoroughly. So you and the whole staff at the university did a great job. It was really wonderful.
Thank you.
Scotty, I don't know if this week's appropriate or next. Do we need to discuss offline any receiver tweaks to match up with the actual implementation of the data engine? I think you're muted.
Later this week would be a good time because the Leaf module and the RF module connectors are the next two things that we have to iron out to make sure all the I/O is good on the data engine.
Okay, just send me an email when you're ready.
Okay, thanks.
And have I missed anyone? So not hearing anything, I guess we're open for general discussion.
Okay, I guess I can address John's question about the clock. I would expect that you would receive the clock from the clock module and that you would probably buffer it twice. So in other words, you receive it on a receiver and then the output of your receiver would run to two other buffers. One would be a local one, one would be mine, to keep the skew down between the FPGA and the ADD. And as far as what buffer you want to use, I would recommend using a differential coming in because we can run it, make it LVDS. And keep the noise down on the clock. And Tom McDermott might want to check in on this too, but we have the capability to send LVDS clocks from the clock module, or we can do single-ended too. It's programmable. So you can decide which you want to do. Does that answer your question?
Well, what you're saying is that you would connect clock coming from the clock module will connect to the input of two buffers and the output of one buffer would go to the ADD converter and the output of the other buffer would go to the clock out pin, right?
You could do it that way, but typically LVDS buffers are point to point. So you'd have a single buffer on your board that would receive the clock module clock and then that buffer would drive two buffers, one going to you, one going to me, so that they're basically this as coherent as possible with each other.
Oh, okay. So then that would be a total of three LVDS buffers.
Right. And you can use little bitty, SOT23 type buffers if you could. That's fine. They don't have to be a big fancy clock chip because the clock chip, it has a buffer on it on the clock module. So, but again, you're going across two connectors. So you really want to receive it with something.
Now, Scotty, why wouldn't the clock going to the FPGA be coming directly from the clock module?
It could be, but I would rather have the clock that he uses because I want a coherent clock.
Okay, so you want to pass through there.
Right.
So you'd have one LVDS receiver driving an LVDS driver that would then go to the FPGA.
Right. And then he'd have a local driver that would drive his A to D converter on his board.
Right. And that would not be LVDS. That's single-ended.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going to end up with some skew there because, LVDS versus a single-ended clock.
That's not a big deal because the M clock doesn't have to stay synchronous. It's the frame clock and bit clocks that have to stay synchronous.
The thing is that the frame clock and the bit clock, I'm going to generate off the clock he sends to me. So as far as the skew goes, I can't really find anything in the data sheet that says what the skew can be, because all that matters is that you are exactly frequency locked with dividers.
That's correct. That's handled within the A to D chip.
But as far as the onboard clock, for onboard clock distribution for John's board, I would look for an on semiconductor or a silicon, SI Labs or one of those, a 1-to-2 LVDS driver. So take an LVDS in, send one LVDS out to me at the FPGA and take one LVDS in locally on his board. And that way you really minimize the edge transition skew between the two clocks.
I still don't understand what the second LVDS driver is.
The first one,
well, there's one receiver and one driver, but internally it's single-ended.
Well, if you have a different driver, in other words, you accept the clock from the clock module and you split it into two, and one of them is LVDS and one of them is single-ended, it's going to probably be difficult to get those edges to line up.
You don't have to. That's the point. You don't have to.
Well, it's
the chip takes care of it.
Yeah.
The chip has synchronizers within it.
That's fine, but you know, keep the clock differential everywhere and you keep
But you can't out. No, but the chip doesn't take a differential clock. It's single-ended.
I thought it was a differential input.
No.
Well, okay. That answers the question.
But the chip I would recommend you look at is a Tiny Logic 125. Whether it's HC125 or I don't know if there's an L and a Z or something in there.
Okay.
But the 125 is available in the SOT23, and it is a high current driver and low propagation delay. So
okay,
that's single.
That's a place to start. That's a single-ended in and out.
Right.
But it will buffer the internal clock in a way similar to the LVDS driver headed out.
Well, so then if I'm going to use LVDS. In so it'll come in LVDS, go into an LVDS driver, a buffer
receiver
go ahead.
Yeah, you have a LVDS receiver taking it from the clock module, then internally it will drive an LVDS driver back out to the FPGA. And then the single-ended buffer to the A to D chip.
Oh, all right. I would have to get I would need to convert from LVDS to single-ended to drive the HC125 buffer.
Yeah, well, that's what the receiver does. That's what a LVDS receiver is. It goes from LVDS to single-ended.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Do you have any part number in mind for that too?
LVDS receiver and driver?
Yeah.
90C 31 and 32.
Okay. All right.
Those are four ways. I'm thinking we might be able to find a one receiver, one driver.
Find a single, yeah.
But that's those are the characteristics you're looking for.
Okay.
Let me actually see the part that I use, because I do use these.
While you're looking that up, Scotty, is the clock module itself simple enough to replicate, or is that something that would be cheaper to make better as a plug-in board for the Grape?
You want a plug-in board. You don't want to redo this. This is an 8-layer board.
Okay.
So
what's the connector to it?
It's an M.2 connector.
Ooh.
Which is you can see, well, I'll show it to you here in a second, but
I'm familiar with the M.2 memory.
Yeah. It's like the SSD connector.
Right.
So it's 75 pin, about yay wide. So.
Wow.
But for you, I mean, you're not even going to use half of the pins. So
I still have to have the socket to tie it on the board.
You still have to have the socket to tie on the board, but the good news is the socket is $1. So if we picked it because it was cheap and is able to transmit high speed signals. So since they could run PCI Express over it. So that's why we picked it, because it was inexpensive. So
is the documentation or the schematic for the clock board the same place that I found the remote board that had the driver for the I2C bus?
No, it's not anywhere yet, because we are still working on it. Once we get it finalized,
okay.
Put up there.
If you want me to take a peek at it, if you weren't happy to do that.
Okay.
I did get a copy.
I was going to send David a copy of it too when I get it to the point where it's not in flux.
Okay. I did get a copy of the other schematic. It looks like what I have to replicate is the the long driver for the wire, and I was going to ask if I could disconnect the interrupt and just connect that to plus five, so I have two plus five and two ground signals.
Oh, on the magnetometer?
Yeah, for the extension cable.
Yeah, you can strap the magnetometer to use plus five and just ignore the interrupt. In fact, there's some discussion still on the Rev E magnetometer, which will be the production one, whether we're even going to leave the interrupt on there at all, because it seems to be the consensus is that nobody's going to ever use it. So you might as well just make the board simpler and get rid of it, and then not have to worry about, well, did I strap it right, or did I put the right part in the right place, and just get 2 5-volt lines, get a little bit less loss, get a little bit less drop in the lines.
Yeah, that could make a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, I saw those diagrams that Jules had, and we do actually have that extra capacitance on the board. So the traces that he showed, ours should be the smooth one, because we have that extra 200 mics. So hopefully that was Jules' suggestion to add that. Either Jules or Dave, one of the two, said you need more capacitance, so we put a lot more on there.
The other thing I forgot to report is I was working with Ben on that code, the C code for the Grape Gen 2, and we just about have it working where we're getting timings off of the rising and falling edge of the 1 PPS. And I've written a program to capture to 6 decimal places in time the rising and falling edge timing, so I can get a distribution of how much jitter we got using the hardware clock being looked at in a C program. And then I'm going to rewrite and replace the code to look, instead of looking at the hardware edges, to look at the clock, system clock, and see how bad the jitter is on that, which I'm expecting to get a lot worse. But then we at least compare the two and have something to look at.
And I'm waiting for Jules to come up with a 20 board array of magnetometers.
I think he had.
I would 20. Encourage him.
Yeah. So he's going to have like the trident, right? He's going to have 3 pipes coming down, and a cross connection, and 2 magnetometers in each one.
It's going to be a trident in each axis.
And Scotty, he is working on one of those $1,000 magnetometers too.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, it looked to me like at the conference the other day that we compare pretty favorably to the high buck magnetometers.
Oh yes.
So that's good news.
I'm really surprised the manufacturer didn't recognize the temperature coefficient of the ferrite material in the cores.
Well, it claims it's temperature compensated, but it isn't really.
That's hard to do. I've tried to do that, and it's next to impossible because it varies so much.
Wasn't that the idea why Dave wanted to put those on there, was to have two checks on each, or a check on each board?
Well, our check now is to bury it in the ground, so that takes care of that.
Well, that does, unless you have water.
Yeah, really. Or unless the dog digs it up and brings it inside for you.
Yes. So.
Okay, so I can let me show my screen here, and I'll do a super quick review of where we are with the clock module.
And keep an eye on your chip suppliers. Renesas burned up another fab today.
Who did?
Renesas.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 300 millimeter facility.
Jeez, we're overseas or in the
United Japan.
States? Japan. Great. Yeah. Okay, so this is the assembly drawing of the top layer. So the Z GPS, the high performance one, is here. U1 is on the right hand side. The clock distribution and the synthesizer chip is this 65 is the pin number. It's actually U4. If you can see it, it's upside down there in the middle of the chip. And our clock oscillator is up here on the right, Y1, upper right. And as you can see, I'll show you the back side. This is what's on the back of the board. So you can see why my CAD guy was whining at me, because of all the stuff that we have to put on the back. So we're going to have to make sure when we plug this into the data engine that this area down here is a keep out, because these capacitors here are like 2.5 millimeters tall. They're like 470 microfarad SMT guys. And you really, that's what's called out by the clock chip. So we really need to have those on there. And they can't go on the front because of the routing. So they ended up going on the back, where we only have 4 millimeters of space to the data engine. So that gives us, you know, maybe a millimeter of something that goes underneath it. But if we put anything tall underneath it, it'll interfere. So we have to be careful. Like, for instance, if we had another 47 mic cap on the data engine that was located, then the board wouldn't fit. So we're making sure that that's going to work. And then generally for John Ackerman, who's going to lay out a carrier board to accept this board and make it into an instrument for your ham shack, he's just going to have to generally keep out from underneath it, which will be pretty easy when you've got a big board to plug it into. When you're plugging it into two high density boards, plugging them together, then you have to be pretty careful. And I can show you, here is the, whoops, that's not it. The primary side is this. This is the layout. And you can see down here all these squigglies. These are differential pairs, and they're all matched to length. So this one here, the four across the bottom, and this one here are all matched to the same length. So these, and I believe what he did is he took this one and matched them, and this one and matched them. So we really have three matched groups of traces. The data engine uses these four down here. These are for the two RF modules and the low frequency board, the VLF module, and the FPGA. So we could theoretically make this, the FPGA one, the same frequency as the one going to the clock module, but that's, I'd rather have one coming, sorry, going from the VLF module, but I'd rather have something coming back coherent from the VLF module that says, here's the clock, and send me everything based on that clock. And then it's one coherent channel. Anyway, the backside, so, okay, so that this is the ground plane, that's the second layer. And then in, did I say this was eight layers or six layers? He managed to cram it into six. So, so there's a primary layer is parts and traces. Secondary layer is parts and traces. This is the back layer. Then you can see there's a plane above and are below each one of those. And then sandwiched in between those two planes are two more trace layers. So you got basically top, ground plane, trace, trace, ground plane, secondary. And by ground plane, I mean ground or VCC plane, because they have approximately the same impedance to each other, because there's tons of, there's like, I forget how many bypass caps are on this board, but there's a lot for its size. Because if you look at, this is the composite with the top and the bottom shown together. This is only like 30 millimeters across. I mean, this is an inch and a half maybe. So it's really not. Anyway, to go back to the ground layer, we got that layer there. Then we got a basically vertical trace layer with a power plane cut out in it. And then we have the horizontal trace layer. These are the two very center layers. And then we have a power plane layer. And I believe that 5 volts is this plane here. And 3 volts is this plane here. There's just several 3-volt planes. There's an analog plane, two analog planes, and a digital plane. And so they're cut up into areas. And then the secondary side, of course, is what's on the back. So that's where we are. It's pretty much, when I saw that, I was pretty impressed that he had actually been able to do it. It doesn't look like it was too hard. But Scotty, of course, yeah.
The LVDS clocks out. Those are standard LVDS?
They are, that's a good question. They're whatever the 5345 is, they're programmable to be either single-ended or differential. And I think it says they can do LVDS, LV-PECL, single-ended CMOS, or differential CMOS. I think there's 4 things that they can do.
Okay. The receiver uses standard LVDS.
On the FPGA?
No, the receiver... The receiver module, the converter chip uses standard LVDS.
So the clock is differential?
Absolutely.
Oh, I thought the clock was single-ended. Okay.
It's not on the HF receiver. It's absolutely.
Oh, no, wait. You're talking about the HF receiver module, not Jonathan's VLF receiver.
Correct. The HF receiver
module. Okay. Yeah, because the clocks to the RF module slots they're separate. One of these will go to one slot, one will go to the other, one will go to the leaf module, and one will go over to the FPGA on the data engine, those 4.
Okay, just wanted to make sure they're standard LVDS. That's good.
Okay, and the from what I can tell, the LVDS receivers on the FPGA already have their termination resistors internal. So we do not need to put the 64 or however many parallel resistors, shunt resistors, to get LVDS termination.
Right. Yeah. That those are programmable in the FPGA. I believe you can turn them on or off.
Now the transmit ones, only certain modules, only certain banks have true LVDS transmitters. The other ones you have to put resistors on the board to do that, to make it into an LVDS transmitter.
Okay. So when I looked at the data sheet, it looked like the receivers were very standard oriented.
Yeah, and pretty much every differential input is an LVDS receiver.
Okay, but good.
Only the transmitters are only on the bottom two banks of the FPGA, which means there are not enough of them to feed both RFM0 and RFM1 with transmit ports, which means what's going to happen is one of the ports is going to be more suited to a transmitter module than the other. They're not orthogonal because one of them doesn't have transmitters going to it. The other one does. So, but since the receiver, the HF receiver can go in either slot, we'll just use that one for the one for the receiver, and the one that needs to be a transmitter will be a transmitter. Then the other one will be the receiver. So it won't make any difference. And it's amazing when you have 500 IOs and you think you have no problems because you have so many IOs, and then you run out. And then you find out, oh, wait, those IOs can only be used for one purpose. And those IOs have to be 1.5 volts. And then those IOs are, and pretty soon you don't have any IOs left anymore.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot, but it's not.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Scotty, is the footprint for the medium performance GPS the same as this footprint?
The medium performance one is on the secondary side, and it is these two rows of pins here, 24 pins.
Oh, okay.
I could dip. And so the answer is no, it's not. I wish that it was. I also wish that, notice on the primary side, see all these pads here?
Yep.
These are all ground pads on the high performance GPS. Now, if they didn't have all those stinking ground pads in the middle, I could take the secondary one and I could stick it in between.
Yep.
And I could overlap them, and it would be, because we're not going to install both at the same time.
Right.
So they're either or, but you can't do it. So you see all these dots here, these vias, these are all ground vias, grounding those pads that are on the other side of the board.
Yeah.
So at first glance, my CAD guy told me right out of the gate, he says, forget it, we can't do this. So
I can understand why he said that.
It was my job to convince him that it was possible. And that's the thing, is he's pretty good at it. So if you can convince him and he buys into it, he'll do it. So once we got to this placement here that we came up with here, and we had the parts that we put on the back, he said, I can do it. And he did. Once he's convinced.
Yeah, once he was able to straddle those ground pads, that made all the difference in the world.
So one of the things, and maybe this is a good question for you, John, is that, see these three SMAs, mm-hmm. The bottom one is a 1 PPS output. The top one is a 10 megahertz reference output. Mm-hmm. The center one is the GPS antenna. Now, the problem is that underneath these right here is a USB 3 connector from the data on the data engine. Well, it will fit underneath this connector here, but there is no way that you can leave it that way because you won't be able to get your fingers in there and tighten the nut or plug in the USB. It'd be one or the other. So what I'm thinking is we got to change this connector instead of an edge launch off the edge of the board, a right angle through hole on the top of the board to raise it up away from the USB connector. So the question then becomes, if we make this an SMA right angle, it's too deep and it runs into all these parts in here and we'll have to, it's a big mess.
Yep.
But if we use an MMCX right angle, it's small and it fits right in this footprint right here. So the question is, do you know what kind of dual band antenna John had picked out for us to use with this?
I do not know.
Because apparently the antenna is a limiting factor because there's not very many dual band antennas.
I believe that.
And
also, so, does the 1 PPS and the 10 megahertz come to the edge connector as well?
Yes, it does.
Oh, good. Good, good. Good, good, good.
Yeah, lots of extra things come to the edge connector that we don't use on the data engine, but somebody will want. We actually have two 10 megahertz outputs, two 1 PPS outputs. We have one that can be, if you were to make one of these boards with an FPGA on it, then you could actually adjust the 1 PPS with the FPGA and have a processed 1 PPS if you wanted. And we also have the ability to accept a reset and to generate a reset so that if you, at some point, we're going to come up with a new clock module that will allow you to synchronize multiple data engines to within about two clock periods at 122 megahertz. So you're going to have a distribution system that has a reset that goes out that is going to be distributed to all of the data engines, and it's going to be fed through the clock module and synchronized that way. And I think if we do it right, we can get within two clocks. And the thing is, it will be one or two clocks, and it will stay that way. So it'll be a phase offset, but it'll be continuous. It won't be jumping back and forth, because once you synchronize, then you'll be synchronized. Makes sense. Theory anyway. They never really were successful at that too much with the HPSDR. And I think part of the problem was that they didn't actually meet critical timing. And if you don't meet critical timing, all you have to have is one hiccup and you miss one clock. Now you're off by two.
Yep.
And it happens again. You're off by one or three, and then it moves around. And depending on how close your timing is, that could happen more or less often. It just becomes a statistical thing, right?
And that drives you insane.
Yeah, and it did. And that was one of the problems they really tried hard to fix. And
yeah.
The problem is that the LVDS clock on the receiver board, on the Mercury board, was an LVDS. It's a point-to-point clock. So although they did have kind of a jury-rigged system where they could take one clock and feed it to multiple LVDS inputs, it really was a hack, because it was the only reason it worked is because the cables are that long.
Oh, okay.
And it really wasn't the right way to do it. It wasn't designed to do that. So, but we're keeping this in mind here, because I think that there'll be some crazy person who will want to, synchronize eight clock modules or eight DEs together and get four channels per 32 synchronous channels. I mean, who knows, but we don't want to preclude this. We want to be able to do it.
Looks good, though. Nice work.
Thanks. It was a long time coming.
I can really appreciate that.
And especially when you saw it at the beginning, you just go like, oh, my God, how's he going to do this? And you know, the problem is, when my CAD guy gives up on me, then I'm stuck, because if this guy can't do it, then forget it.
Yeah.
So, but like I told him, once you create a miracle, then miracles are expected. So then everyone has to be done. So they don't get, I told them all the easy jobs are already farmed out. So we have only hard jobs left. So.
Yeah, sadly, at Keithley, all the analog stuff, when I was doing the really low current, the CAD guys didn't have the background to do it. So I had to do all the board layouts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Board fun, was huh? part well, that of the Because, you know, you get dielectrics that are too conductive. You know, the board material is too conductive, so you have to work with that by putting slots in. And yeah, it's truly an art, and it takes a lot of, oh yeah, I can't do that type things, and oh yeah, you can't do that. And
speaking
20
of
years later, you finally get it.
The more you do it, the more you can do it, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's one of those.
But speaking of that, if you look up here in the upper right, this is where our clock oscillator is. And we're trying to pull a little bit of a trick here by putting some
isolation.
These are thermal slots that we put in between the planes. And I've got to get with my CAD guy, because he's got a problem here.
Yeah.
I don't want these conductive paths, thermal paths. He's got to break this. Yeah, I want this electrically connected to ground with a trace, but I don't want a big thermal flow there.
Yeah.
And then you go to the next plane.
You have to think in three dimensions, and he's only talking on the top layer.
And part of the problem is he may have traces that run through here that he can't.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to cross into no plane or a cross plane. So you got to be careful doing that. So we may have to rearrange some things to get this thermal plane out of here, because I don't like it. And then on the bottom, there's no plane. And in the two trace layers, you can see there's no planes. There's a single trace. That's fine. But this is not going to fly for the ground, I think.
On the DMM 7510 that I did at Keithley, it's a 7.5 digit DMM. I did the reference module, and I made a thermal isolation thing in the center of the board, and everything was connected with the serpentine connection, and all the routes had to go on that serpentine.
Uh-huh.
And then because I was able to heat the whole inside with resistors, and I was able to hold it to a tenth of a degree at 40 C. And actually have a PID loop running to control it. even with air blowing on it, it worked really well. But the trick was that long serpentine length is what gave me the thermal isolation from the board.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you can get it,
what you've got here won't work.
Pardon me?
Trying to thermally isolate it.
Right, right. But if we could thermally isolate this nearly completely and then blow some air across it, then the air will be the primary cooling mechanism. And the idea is if the rest of the board heats up out here, I don't heat the oscillator up. And then if I blow air across it, this is going to be cooled and it's going to be much more stable than it will be if it has this low.
It's actually going to follow the board air cooling around it. If you really wanted to thermally control that, you could put resistors on there and heat it. It's not hard to do.
Well, one of the options that we have, if you look here, is right up here. This connection right here is a UFL connector. So if you really need to get it off the board, take it off the board. And then you can put it in an oven. You can put it far away. You can put it with its own fan or whatever. So we do have a contingency plan in case. It's supposed to be highly temperature compensated. So it's not supposed to matter in the small excursions that we are going to have. But
once it settles down, it's usually pretty good.
But, Scotty, what are the components that are right above the TCXO?
Up here?
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. These are buffers I'm not sure what they're for. I don't remember.
What I'm thinking is if you could get the TCXO to a board edge.
Up here?
Yeah.
Of course, the flow from the TCXO is across this way and down into the oscillator. So moving it up would be not as good unless we put it up and to the left. And then move the MMCX over here. I mean,
FL
over
something
here.
Like that.
Yeah.
But get it to a board edge and you've got one edge already taken care of and you're getting it out of the way of.
Yeah. I'm not sure. These are probably LED buffers, which means they could just be dispensed with as far as I'm concerned. Because if it's in a box, what do you need LEDs for?
Oh, you got to have blinky lights. I mean, that's required.
Oh, we have other blinky lights. We just don't need these two.
Hey, Scotty, I am
blinky lights and tin hats.
I need to take off.
Okay. Yeah. You look like you're about asleep at the wheel.
To crash there.
Yeah. But this looks really good. So I'll just leave you in charge. Okay, Scotty.
Okay. Thanks. And I have to go pretty quick here too, because I'm getting my second COVID shot tonight.
Ooh,
that's insane. Oh,
don't want to be late for that.
Don't look for me anytime the rest of the week. If it happens like it did last time.
Yeah, three more days on my 2 weeks after.
This is the fourth week for me because my wife was sick, so we put it off for a week. Mm. And so I pretty much, we have to do it.
You got Pfizer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I did Moderna, but I've had my second, but I'm in the 2 weeks.
Didn't have symptoms after the second shot. We didn't have any symptoms after the second shot. So
okay, good, because I had terrible symptoms after the first one. I was not happy.
Yeah,
I had a sore arm. Scotty, I'm joining you on Thursday.
You're joining me on Thursday?
No, I'm doing the same thing on Thursday.
Oh, okay. You're shot on Thursday. Okay, good.
That's the second.
Yep, second one of Pfizer. So anyway, I'm pretty much done anyway. That's a good suggestion, David, to see what we can do there. I know the CAD guy will try to shoot me, but if these are just LEDs, I'm really not worried about it because I'll just take them off.
And the more he grouses, the happier he is.
Well, I've already told him easy is out the window. All this stuff's hard from now on. So,
Yeah, you're going to just have to keep challenging him.
Yeah, I think the data engine's going to do it because it's got all those differential pairs going to the RF module. Uh-huh. And there's way, way more of them than are on here.
Looks good, Scotty.
I just noticed something. You see this dot right here? That's the pin one designator for this jumper, and it's in midair.
Yep.
It's called the virtual dot.
He hasn't gone through and moved those things yet.
Yeah. No, he says he's got cleanup to do. This is just the first pass just and everything routed.
First placement. You don't worry about that at the first part.
Well, if it's past the first placement, it's first routing complete. So, and I already changed some things on the back connect of the connector because I wanted to make sure that the grounds were opposite each other on the M.2 connector. Even though they're offset, I still wanted them orthogonal. And I want to use the same power and ground pinouts on the leaf connector as we use on this connector, so that if you plug one board in the wrong slot, you don't burn anything up. Because you physically could do it. I mean, even you have to be a moron to do it, but you know, we're all going to do it sooner or later. And then you're going to go, crap, my $300 clock modules burn out. And so we're going to prevent that.
Yep.
Yep. And John, the same, I did the same thing as you did with your layout, guys. I was doing audio layout, and I would sit right with them because they didn't understand the routing. They were happy to have the help, but.
Well, I've been working with this guy for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. So he learns pretty fast and he remembers stuff. So he'll actually come up to me and he'll say, are you sure you wanted this connected up this way? Because this doesn't look right. And sure enough, he finds errors. So it's good to have him on another pair of eyes.
Oh, that's excellent to have that kind
of
guy.
You want. Yeah. Definitely what you want.
Yeah, so this is the best CAD guy I've ever worked with, including all the ones at Motorola who are pretty darn good too.